Peace and grace in the name of our Lord Yeshua the Christ, Joshua Somerville Lowther, servant sent to bring a message to the 12 tribes of Israel which are scattered abroad. Greetings. This is going to be part 6 of What is Time, but it's not going to focus as much on when the actual timing of things occur, since we've already covered that in the past. Instead, we're going to focus on primarily some of the thoughts that surround the fourth commandment and things that we have not necessarily discussed, and talking more or less on the observance of the commandment itself in a loose sense, not in a strict dogmatic sense necessarily. So we're going to go to Exodus chapter 20 and just focusing on verse 8 and 11. It says, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. But the seventh day is the Sabbath of Yahweh thy God. For in 6 days," I'm skipping out the center and just focusing on what we're talking about, "for in 6 days Yahweh made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is, and rested," or he Sabbath, that is the word Sabbath once again in the Hebrew, "on the seventh day. Wherefore Yahweh blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it." Okay, that's Exodus chapter 20, and I think most of us can see that out of Genesis chapter 2, where we have read in the past, and most people who read the Bible know the first time the Sabbath is mentioned is in Genesis chapter 2. And in Genesis 2, we have pretty much the same explanation, that Yahweh sanctified the seventh day after he had got done working himself and laboring, and then he made it holy. And it's obvious that that holiness was made for the purpose of man and was not made for the purpose of the creatures prior, but you could also say by the commandment itself that on account of all the people and things that are told to rest, that everything in creation has its place, particularly in an Israelite society, to have a day of rest allotted to it, or specifically the Sabbath is for it. And so there are certain elements out of that small statement called the fourth commandment that should be looked at in a little bit more depth. And there's some things also to consider when we talk about the timing of the Sabbath, as we have talked about the phases of the moon being connected to the Sabbath day, and how that the Sabbath is literally a sign, according to Exodus chapter 31. You can see that there is an intrinsic connection between rest and the moon, or at least there should be, and the lights in the heaven. So, with that being said, we should expect that whenever we study nature and we look at how the cycles of things work, that they also are following the same system, if it is that the lunar system is the correct weekly system that we should be going by. And it seems as if there's enough scientific evidence that suggests that this is the case, from things that people have studied on multiple different levels, whether it's agriculture or whether it is how animals breed, or whether it is how certain things happen in seeds, and the uptake of water is one particular study that can be found on the subject. And so there's different things that suggest that nature also responds to the lights in the heavens and the connection that that has with the earth. So whenever we would consider the commandment, we have to think about it in an intrinsic way, and in a way that all of creation in some way can respond to it. So the first statement out of the fourth commandment is, remember the Sabbath day, okay, that we're going to look at. And the word remember is the Hebrew word zakar, and that literally means to mark something. And we might say in the English the same, a very similar idiom, we would say, mark this day, you know, make a mark for it, or, you know, mark it. Some people would even say, mark it in your calendar, you know, or talk about it in that sort of a way. And in the Hebrew, the word remember literally means to mark it, to make a point about it, to punch it out, you know, to actually make some kind of notation to remember it. And it specifically is talking about the Sabbath day or the rest day. So whenever we consider that there is actually a sign in the heavens that witnesses to the Sabbath day, we know what is being referenced as far as marking and remembering what it is that we are to remember. It's also interesting to note that it is the only commandment out of the Exodus chapter 20 lineup that starts with remember. And it's not a negative, necessarily a negative commandment, thou shalt not, but rather it is a positive commandment that says remember. There's another positive commandment that comes directly afterwards. It says honor thy father and thy mother. So you have different types of commandments lined up in Exodus chapter 20, and they're put that way in a certain way and worded a certain way so that we can study them and understand what the principles of God are on the subject. I'm going to go to Genesis chapter 9 as an example of this type of remembrance and discuss it again. The same exact word, zakar, is used whenever Yahweh tells Noah to remember a covenant that he made with him, which, interestingly enough, is also referred to as a sign, which is the same word used in Exodus chapter 31 in order to connect the two things, the two tokens, the two signs, the two signals of a covenant that is being made with men. So in Genesis 9, starting in 15, Yahweh says, I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you, and every living creature of all flesh, and the waters shall no more become a flood to destroy all flesh. And the bow shall be in the cloud, and I will look upon it, that I may remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, this is the token. Now that is the same Hebrew word, oath, or uth, depending on how you'd pronounce it, which is the word sign in Genesis chapter 1:14, as well as the word sign, the Sabbath is a sign, in Exodus chapter 31. So this also is a type of uth of something in the heavens. In this case, it's the bow that is set in the cloud, or what we call a rainbow, that is a remembrance of a covenant made so that Yahweh would not destroy all flesh. And then he goes on to say, which I have established between me and all flesh that is upon the earth. So you can see also that remember is being linked to something that Yahweh sees and something that people see, and it's also linked to a covenant, just like the Sabbath was talked about in Exodus chapter 31 and in Exodus chapter 20 also. So interestingly enough, you can see that the fourth commandment starts with remember, as well as the rainbow being mentioned here as a sign and a covenant, and having a lot of similarities between the two things. And the reason I bring it up is it is a good way to look at what remember means in a Hebrew mindset, or in the biblical mindset, that it is linked to something that you're going to see. It's a token of something. There is a token. So even in the fourth commandment, while it's generally disregarded, the word remember has a significant point that it is something that is going to be seen as a token to what you are going to be doing that day. Resting. And the idea of remembrance is very particular to seeing signs and tokens throughout the entire law. Moving on also to another point to be made is in Numbers chapter 15, 38 through 40, where is another remembrance that is being told to the people, not particularly of a covenant, but of a disobedience that took place just prior for somebody who had broke the Sabbath. So in Numbers chapter 15, starting in 38, it says, "Speak unto the children of Israel, bid them that they make fringes in the borders of their garments throughout their generations, and that they put upon the fringe of the borders a riband of blue, and it shall be unto you for a fringe, that ye may look upon it and remember," there's the word zakar again, "all the commandments of Yahweh and do them, and that ye and that ye seek not after your own heart and your own eyes, after which ye use to go a whoring, that ye may remember and do all my commandments and be holy unto your God." So Numbers 15:34 through 40 also calls to remembrance the keeping of the law by something that a person would see. And once again, this law specifically was told to be done because there just prior was a situation with a man who had gathered sticks on the Sabbath day. Now, whether necessarily that was added or put there just because of the Sabbath or not is speculation. It doesn't say directly it was because of that, but that is what happened prior, just before that is talked about. So there is a connection once again in the idea of remembering and seeing something, and that connection should continuously take us back to the idea of what we're talking about in Exodus chapter 20, that when you see this thing, it should cause you to remember what is happening, or mark that there is a time that is special. There's also a place in Deuteronomy 5:15, which is where the Ten Commandments is found in the book of Deuteronomy. There's two listings of the Ten Commandments, one in Exodus 20 and another in Deuteronomy 5. And in Deuteronomy 5:15, things are said just a little bit differently. It does not start the fourth commandment out by saying remember. It starts it off by saying keep. And that word keep means guard, or to hedge in, to keep safe, to be circumspect is another way it is translated. In other words, don't forget it. It's another way to say remember, to guard it, to keep it very sacred. And the word remember is not found in that version until you get down to verse 15. And it says, "And remember that thou was a servant in the land of Egypt, and that Yahweh thy God brought thee out thence through a mighty hand and by a stretched out arm. Therefore Yahweh thy God commanded thee to keep the Sabbath day." Okay, so in this way, there's a different type of remembrance that's being asked for us to do when we see it. It's not just to remember creation, as the first commandment implies, that we are to remember it because Yahweh created the world, but that there was a time in which Israel, and probably a time now that exists when Israel does not keep the Sabbath in any way, shape, or form, whether that's Saturday, Sunday, or a true Sabbath, but that when they were slaves in Egypt, that there was a time where they were not allowed to keep the Sabbath. Their masters literally did not give them that option. And now this can be easily proven whenever one turns in Exodus chapter 5, and when you read 1 through 5, you can see that it says, "And afterwards Moses and Aaron went in, and they told Pharaoh, Thus saith Yahweh, God of Israel, Let my people go, that they may hold a feast." That word is chag, which is a festival. Very interesting. We'll get into that in one of the next messages, is the differences of the two words for festival. But going on, "Unto me in the wilderness, and Pharaoh said, Who is Yahweh that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I know not Yahweh, neither will I let Israel go. And they said, Let us go." Now I'm paraphrasing some of this. "We pray thee, 3 days' journey into the desert, and sacrifice unto Yahweh our God. And the king of Egypt said unto them, Wherefore do ye, Moses and Aaron, let the people from their works? Go get you unto your burdens. And Pharaoh said, Behold, the people of the land are many, and ye make them rest from their burdens. Well, that word rest there is you make them Sabbath. You make them to have a Sabbath from their burdens. It's the literal translation of the word. So whenever we can go back and find the word Sabbath being used in reference to the treatment of Israel by their taskmasters, by Egypt when they were servants, we can see that the Sabbath was not being allowed to be remembered. Whether they personally remembered it or marked it or not, they were not being given the option, probably with the exception of punishment of death or of some other great punishment, to remember the Sabbath. So one of the secondary reasons after creation that Israel was told that they should remember this is because when Israel is put into a state of bondage, they're no longer allowed to worship on the Sabbath and remember the Sabbath and to keep it holy, as the commandment goes on to say. And this can simply be seen in the book of Jeremiah whenever it is talked about that because Israel did not remember to keep the Sabbath and did not keep it holy and did not keep their new moons and did not keep the Sabbaths of years for the people to be able to worship on, that he says he'll let the land lie desolate and then it will keep its Sabbath. And so that's a situation of, once again, where servitude, slavery, is going to be put on the people. If you do not want to rest one way, then you'll rest another way. And it's the unfortunate situation that Yahweh puts us in, but we have a choice and we don't seem to keep it, even though it's something that should easily be able to be remembered if we would pay attention to the lights in the heavens and if we would pay attention to just the Word of God that sits on our shelf and has the dust all over it. So you have to consider this whenever you go back and think about some of the things that we've talked about before in the meaning of the word Sabbath, because the meaning of Sabbath, once again, references that fulfillment day or that completion day, and that the word seventh is no different in places than the same words used for fulfillment or to settle down or to complete something that is completed. So when we're being asked to remember something, we're being asked to remember the completion of time that we actually see and the rest that God had in creating the earth, as well as the completion of creation in a fullness of its creation also. So the Sabbath has two different meanings, where there's a fulfillment of creation in 6 days and there's a fulfillment of time, which ends the week that takes place also. So, and secondarily to remember that we were servants at one time, and that should be something that when we couple Exodus 31, Exodus 20, Deuteronomy 5, and all of these verses together, and we consider that if we will not hearken unto the covenant that Yahweh gives us in Sabbathing and actually guard it to keep it like the commandment tells us and remember it, then we inevitably are going to be reduced back into a form of slavery in one way or another. Some people are in a form of slavery and they don't even know it. They work 7 days a week and they never stop, and they seem to think that that's some form of Christian freedom that they are given by God or something. But it's very obvious that when you don't have even a day to rest, that you are in a form of slavery, either because you have to, or because, like it says in Numbers chapter 15, you're lusting with your eyes and you are desiring to do something contrary to Yahweh's commandments. And those are the types of things that bring people into slavery and into servitude of their own hearts, and ultimately reduces them to a form of idolatry where they have nothing to remember anyway because they have forgotten Yahweh that formed them. So the second part of that is, the second part we're going to focus on is going to be back in Exodus chapter 20, is to keep it holy, or literally to hallow it. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, or literally the Hebrew is remember the Sabbath day to hallow it. So moving on into that, we have to ask some of the questions going back, and we're going to keep kind of juggling with the different places in the Bible that we have already looked at. That the Sabbath was consecrated by Yahweh first in Genesis chapter 2, as we had already discussed. And so the holiness of the Sabbath, what makes the Sabbath holy, is essentially found in Genesis chapter 2. It was made for the cause of Adam, or for man, as we had discussed, and and here's where the literal meaning of the word holy comes in, that he would keep it pure, that he would make it holy, as we refer to it, sanctify it, venerate it. All these words are found in understanding what the word holy means, because that's essentially what we're asking. The question we're asking is, how do we keep it holy? And the reason I gave the literal meaning of to hallow it is because the word keep is actually not in the Hebrew translation of Exodus 20. Now, it is in Deuteronomy 5. The word keep means to guard, as I had mentioned. But this was constructed probably to harmonize the two commandments out of Deuteronomy and Exodus. But the word keep is not actually in Exodus 28, to keep it holy. It's just to hallow it. Remember the Sabbath day to hallow it. So the question we have primarily here is, what does it mean to hallow it? And that was why I was mentioning to be pure, to be holy, to be sanctified, to be venerated, to be hallowed. And then we have to ask, for what purpose or what reason are we to hallow something, are we to purify, to keep something pure, and in which ways? And it should lead our minds into all different understandings of how to do this. And this is where specific dogmas and understandings of how to do this will come into play. Asking yourself, how do I keep the Sabbath holy, or how do I keep it pure? That word holy is generally found throughout the Bible, and it is the common word used, which is the word kodesh, and you can see it used in a variety of different ways to make something holy or to consecrate something, to make something pure. And in the Greek Septuagint translation of it, you have the word found that is, if I'm pronouncing it right, hagiazo, which is connected to the word used commonly throughout the scripture, hagos, if I'm saying that right also, which means the same thing, to keep holy, to sanctify, but it specifically has the meaning of purification, to purify something until it's in its purest form. And I think that this is where a lot of people get hung up on understanding what it means to keep the Sabbath holy, because it ends up leading them down a path of trying to refine it and refine it and refine it before long you're sitting and doing nothing and don't know exactly what you can and can't do. And then it leads to like an overwhelmingness of things. But if we can consider that purification or holiness, sanctification, is the idea of stripping away certain impurities of life and to keep something holy and to reduce it down to its actual meaning, to the things that are actually being meant out of the commandment itself, then I think we will have the ability to not get as lost as we understand it. And that would specifically be remembering the day of rest, to remember to rest, to remember or mark that special time, and to not just keep it holy, but to hallow it. And for the purpose is all of the things that we have already discussed. What is it that we would want to do or want to purify? You know, it's not just in the sense of ourselves, of being more pure as individuals, but it's in the purpose of resting in a more pure way, or focusing on the Sabbath in the way that it is meant to be used by God. And so we know that it is a purpose of rest from labor, specifically. By extension, it is for worship of the Creator in place of work, to put in place of you wanting to work or working, that you worship the Creator who created everything in 6 days and who let Israel go free from their bondage. The hallowing, it's a special setting apart, which is specifically for resting in Yahweh. You hear a lot of people talk about resting in God or resting in the Lord, resting in Jesus, and things of that nature. And it's implied in the commandment itself that we are to rest in the Creator of the universe, in the Creator of everything, by doing what it is that He has asked us to do. The keeping of the Sabbath holy is one of the things that every soul, every person, the Bible generally uses the word soul, and I like that better because it ties your spiritual person to your living person more closely. So I like to refer to people as souls rather than peoples or persons, which every soul must study out to define for themselves. The Sabbath is not something in this day and age that we can hammer down what you can and can't do a lot of times. There are some things that we know specifically that you shouldn't do, like labor and work and business and things like that. But a lot of people get lost, as I said, as you know, it's a sticky thing to get involved with other people's convictions is what I'm getting at. So you have to be leery of getting too involved in that. Because there's so many divisions on many things, and our personal definitions of one tenet of Sabbath keeping may not be agreed on by those who are around us. So when we consider keeping something holy, we have to consider that, in a way, this is specifically being talked about for us personally and not what we do for our neighbors. That's His relationship with God, and He has to come to that point of understanding in His own heart, and it's not given to us to judge everybody around us of how well or how unwell they keep the Sabbath holy. There was, in times past, people would have taken counsels from their elders or their heads of families. Most likely they would be the ones who decided whether someone was willfully or ignorantly breaking the Sabbath. So you would have an elder sitting at the gates, or he would just be your grandpa or your great-grandpa or someone like that, and most likely families worshipped in the same fashion. So you would know by this old man's decision whether or not the person was willfully or ignorantly breaking the Sabbath. The difference, willful breaking of a law, is someone who intentionally goes out of their way to break the law. Intentionally, they want to, they don't care. They're disregarding Yahweh. They're lusting after their own eyes and their own heart. Whereas, on the other hand, ignorant implies what I think we still understand in the English language, that you have ignored something, but it means it's an unintentional breaking of the law. You may have accidentally done something and didn't know, and hopefully you have a good judge that would do that. But once again, this type of thing is not necessarily given to us to judge our brethren. We are not in the place of counsel at this time in our society. So, yet it's in a time when Israel's in such a disarray as this, that this thing must be focused on by the devoted heads of houses, whether you're a grandfather, a father, a brother, a stepfather, which essentially would be a master. Whoever you are, having the highest God-ordained authority in your household, you are the one who is going to have to help understand what it means to keep the Sabbath holy, what that means to you and your household. And if you are the only one observing, which is a lot of times the case, you are left to your own research. Fathers specifically are going to have to take this as a special part of their God-ordained authority to arrange the laws of God in their home as they understand them and as they can relate them to their families, to their wives and to their children, and to those who eventually will be born to them. And I'm not saying to be afraid to counsel with other people. It's probably one of the best things you can do is counsel with other Sabbath keepers to understand the laws and study them out for yourself. But you know, don't pass the buck and leave it up to maybe what you might hear me say on how to keep the Sabbath, or what you've heard some other person say on how to keep the Sabbath. That's your own personal responsibility to study. So it's very important for people to do this in and of themselves, and not to, as I said, pass the buck or push it off onto some other interpretation. And, of course, that's going to create certain conflicts between people, but if the idea of keeping it holy is a personal responsibility between two people is already understood, I think it would be a whole lot easier for Israel to get along in this time of struggle that we have with us, where we have people doing so many different things, and I don't think it's ever probably been any differently. We look at during the time of Christ, and there was certainly quite a few arguments taking place between the scribes and Pharisees, the disciples and people of this sort, what you could and couldn't do, whether you could eat corn while you walked down the road, or whether you weren't allowed to pick anything. So there's an obvious built-in argument that happens when people start observing the Sabbath together in a society. So we have to expect that, and we have to be biblically realistic in understanding that if we're going to put this in play in our personal lives, that we are going to have to allow other people the same liberty to interpret the scriptures as they see best. And so there is a difference in seeing someone who willfully breaks the Sabbath, who breaks what they say that they do. You know, if they claim that they keep the Sabbath in this certain way, but you know that that's not the case, rather than passing a type of judgment onto the person or getting into a screaming match with them, it would be much better to try to make the point that you aren't going to fellowship with them, because that is the admonition that Paul tells us to do with a brother who is going astray, to try to correct them personally. And if they won't receive it, then after, three or four times, you have to go your way, seeing that they are a heretic, that they even come against themselves in their own judgment, that they are a hypocrite in effect. So you can't, while we are not in a situation where we can fulfill the entirety of the law, which we're going to see some of the strictness of what Sabbath keeping meant to law keeping Israel, it's not given to us to be the judge of our neighbors and of our brethren, but rather that we are to try to work together for good. So it's very important that particularly heads of houses try to be a good witness when they're trying to understand the Sabbath, when they're teaching about the Sabbath, and that they can help others in following it better. But more importantly, the heartfelt conviction is the part of Sabbath keeping that a person is going to have to offer to their neighbor more than judgment. And that's what we should more be focusing on. So with that being said, let's consider a few verses which are commonly viewed in an unbiblically realistic way. I'm going to give a couple examples of what people have argued about that I've been exposed to, or different understandings of things. And more importantly, there's some unbiblically realistic ways of viewing certain Bible verses that leads to people making doctrines that they can't follow out and nobody can follow out. And then it inevitably leads to the mindset that it's an impossibility to follow this law because it's so strict. And when we get to biblical impossibilities, with the exception of miracles that we can't do, we know that there's a problem, because God's not going to command us to do something he knows that we aren't going to do, or have no ability to even try to do. So with that, we're going to go to Exodus chapter 35, 2 and 3. And in Exodus chapter 35... 2 and 3, it says, 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day there shall be to you a holy day. All of those words we've already seen, they all mean the same thing. A Sabbath of rest to Yahweh. Whosoever doeth work therein shall be put to death. So there's one of the places that we can see where there's a very strict punishment that was being implied for breaking Yahweh's law. It was a death penalty offense, hands down. It was among the highest offenses towards God to do if you were going to be killed for it. So, you know, that should tell you how strict of an understanding the people at one time had over this. And then it goes on to say in 35:3, here's where the unbiblically realistic understanding seems to come in. Ye shall kindle no fire throughout your habitation upon the Sabbath day. Now, I've heard a lot of discussion over that over the years, and I'm sure as you study the Sabbath, especially if you're a person who's never thought about the Sabbath very much, and you're getting into this subject more and more, you're going to see stuff like this, and you're going to ask yourself, well, how am I going to heat my house in the wintertime and keep the Sabbath? Well, this is impossible. God must not really want me to do that. You know, it leads to mindsets that way, and that might seem ridiculous, but it is the mindset that people have. So here's some questions. I kind of have it in a question type way. What do I do in the winter if I can't kindle a fire to stay warm? Maybe it never gets cold in Israel. There's the first one. When you're an American and you live in America, or you're in Europe and you live in Europe, the first logical question might be, well, this only applies in Israel. It doesn't get cold in Israel. So on the website, when you go and you look at this document as you're doing a study on it, which will have its own connection to this message, I put a whole pile of Bible verses, and I'm not going to read them off. I'm just going to give them a few of them to you. That Israel very much knew what snow was, and it definitely snowed and gets cold there. So there's a bunch of Bible verses. You can specifically see where people, you know, got into some kind of a conflict during a time of snow. It talks about things freezing. Talks about frost upon the ground. Talks about two people battling during a time of snow and a battle taking place. So we're well aware that there was snow in Israel, in ancient Israel, starting at Exodus at least, and making its way to Revelation 1:14. So all throughout the Bible, we have snow being mentioned and the people understanding what that is. Now, without freezers and refrigeration and things that make snow, you wouldn't even know what the term snow meant unless you had seen it. So we definitely know the people are aware of snow. It's not an unknown thing. In John 18:18, there's a part in the Bible that I think a lot of people will remember. Peter was said to be warming himself by coals. And this was right before the Passover, and anybody who observes Passover in the spring knows that in the early mornings before the sun comes up, which is the time given, that it can still be pretty chilly. And so Peter was warming himself, even in the springtime, near a warm fire of coals to get himself warm. So what do we do to keep warm on the Sabbath then? You know, that's obviously what the verse means, that we can't burn a fire. At least that's what the majority of people would say that it means. But the Bible's very clear that it gets cold enough that a person needs to keep himself warm, and the people knew what snow was. So maybe the prohibition is on making the fire, kindling the fire. What does kindle mean in English? It just means to start the fire, right? So maybe if you get the fire done the day before and you keep it burning the entire day long, that would be the answer to the question. So let's investigate that. Let's see. Kindle in Hebrew is the word bar, which is in your Strong's Concordance H1197. You can look it up for yourself. But it's also translated burn, burnt, burning, and almost always it is translated that the fire is not just started, but it's been going also. So you would literally have to translate that verse if you wanted to know what its full meaning was. Ye shall burn no fire. So that rules that one out too. What to do? Should we ignore it, justify, or break the law just so we can stay warm and we don't freeze to death in the winter? What do we do? Well, consider the context. I'm not going to read all of the verse because it would be a huge thing, but read the context of Exodus chapter 35 and 36. And I'm going to list some high points off here in Exodus 35. So in Exodus chapter 35, some of the high points is that, one, Moses gathers all the congregation of the children of Israel together. Now I'm giving this as a biblically realistic way to look at it. It's called context. Let's look at the context and see what's being talked about. Moses gathered all the congregation of the children of Israel together. Secondly, he tells them, 6 days you shall work, or work shall be done. The seventh day there will be to you a holy day, which is called a Sabbath. Three, kindle no fire throughout your habitation upon the Sabbath day. Four, take ye from among you an offering unto Yahweh. Whosoever is of a willing heart, let him bring it, an offering to Yahweh, gold, silver, and brass. Five, of goat's hair, ram skins dyed red, badger skins, shittim wood. Six, oils and incense. Seven, stones, precious stones. Eight, all to make the tabernacle, his tent, his coverings, his tacks, his boards, his bars, his pillars, his sockets. And then it goes on to say that it's for making the ark, the staves thereof, the mercy seat, the veil of the covering, the table, the staves, everything, including the tables of showbreads, the candlesticks, all of that stuff was in need of being made of all the offerings that were being brought. If you notice, if you just look at it in a highlighted way, the question of when the fire was not supposed to be burned and why seems to be caught up in the idea that these people were going to be working metal, boiling inks, dyeing things, smelting, and all kinds of other fire-using labors. So that specifically the labor or the work that was in need of being done for the tabernacle was also being told to them from the very beginning. Don't forget the Sabbath. 6 days you work. Seventh is a holy day called the Sabbath day. Don't burn no fires, but we need offerings and we need to work this stuff. So Moses seems to be implying to the people that don't use the Sabbath as a justification for working on the Sabbath. Don't use the tabernacle as justification for working on the Sabbath. Don't say, well, we're doing it for Yahweh, so therefore we can work 7 days a week. He doesn't mind. Only people that were allowed to work 7 days a week were those who gave the offerings, and those were the priests. And they are not being told to be the only ones working. A matter of fact, the two men who make these offerings, one's from Judah, one's from Dan, who are the masters of making these things. And 36, end of 35 and 36 goes on to tell you their names and who they were, where they came from, and that sort of thing, and that they were masters of working metal and working threads and embroideries and dyeing things, and they were very skilled men. But almost everything being mentioned, not everything, but almost everything being mentioned that needed created was going to use fire. You were going to need to burn a fire in order to cause this to happen. So the prohibition from a biblically realistic standpoint is that it has nothing to do with whether you can have a fire on the Sabbath to stay warm, or just for pleasure for that matter, or for cooking, or for any reason. But rather, this specific law that is only found in Exodus chapter 35 is tied to Exodus chapter 35 in the work. And I would say it goes in the face of, now this is just what I'm saying, it would go in the face of the idea that a person can labor in some form, or sell, or buy, or do things of that nature for the church, or for the congregation, or because they're a preacher, or whatever it is, that somehow gives them the ability to break the Sabbath because they somehow are working for God. Okay? That is not a biblically harmonious thought. The Bible does not harmonize that. A matter of fact, once you take the position that Exodus 35 is prohibiting people from doing these types of works on the Sabbath day, it goes to prove that people of all types, no matter they're working for God or not, are also to work for God in the sense of resting on the Sabbath rather than laboring and calling it godly. So let that be considered whenever we think about certain differences that occur in doctrine. Now, once again, even with that viewpoint that I give you, and I think that's the actual accurate way to look at that verse, if a person tells me that they think that verse means, no, in ancient Israel they were never allowed to burn a fire on the Sabbath day, the only thing I would have to say to them in judgment is, don't ask me to come over your house on the Sabbath in, you know, the winter, because it would probably be an excruciating experience. So I would rather remember the Sabbath and look for answers that make a biblically realistic sense out of it. Next, we're going to move on to the next part of the commandment, which says, 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. Now, some say labor is not commanded in the Bible. Only rest. There's one day of rest commanded to you out of the Bible. Most people view the fourth commandment as the law that says you shall rest on one day. But it's actually the complete opposite of that. It says, 6 days thou shalt labor. It's a command that a person is actually supposed to do labor, whatever that is, or work, whatever that is, for 6 days. So when a person says that there's no place in the Bible that commands that a person has to work, they are proven wrong by the commandment that tells them they should rest, because it's implied that 6 days is going to be the amount of time they need to get their things done. And given not everybody has to do that for necessity, but it's not to say that it is not something that should be done. Most of the people who object to a lunar Sabbath, one that holds the new moon, as I had proposed in the prior messages, and I'm still proposing here, that it extends the Sabbath period, they would argue that this is contrary to the fourth commandment. But the question I would have, is that the way the biblical mind, the person who lived during the time of Israel as a nation, viewed the six working days in the Sabbath? Did they view it as it had to be one day of rest? Now, I would say, let's go to Ezekiel chapter 46, verse 1, which we've read in part already. And we can see where it says, thus saith the Lord Yahweh, the gate of the inner court that looketh towards the east shall be shut the 6 working days, but on the Sabbath it shall be open, and in the day of the new moon it shall be open. So not only is it seen here very easily that the 6 working days were separate from two other days, which were the new moon and the Sabbath days. In other words, that those 2 days were Sabbath days because they're not working days. So it makes there's a pretty good point to connect Exodus chapter 20 and Ezekiel chapter 46 in asking Ezekiel what his interpretation of this idea on the lunar Sabbath would be, whether we actually should rest on the new moon or not. I say Ezekiel's the best person to answer that question, and he says there are 6 working days, but there's a Sabbath and a new moon day that are not for working. They're separate. So for the objector who would say that the new moon, it violates the fourth commandment by telling you to rest for more than one day on account of the new moon, they're not considering the full meaning of the word Sabbath, and they're not considering the biblical testimony on the subject itself, particularly the true meaning, as we talked about, that the word Sabbath is derived from the word seba, or sebo, which means to fulfill or to be completed, and that is, it is a feminine construct of those words in the Hebrew, that it is a completion time or a fulfillment time, which at the end of the month would also include the new moon as part of the Sabbath, part of the completion, part of the fulfillment, part of that specific time. So we can also look at this specific law as not just being for how many days you rest or that you should rest, but that it is seen for what we know to be good health, for to be active, you know, to not rest or sit around all the time. If a person were to Sabbath or sit around every day, they would obviously not be a hard-working or respectable type of person. So the idea of working for 6 days coming out of the scriptures is absolutely founded, and that all of the good things that come from a person working for 6 days are going to be reaped out of the commandment that has to do with the Sabbath day and remembering it. Now, we have to remember, during the time where this law was written, people probably worked a lot harder in order to acquire their food and their clothing and things like that. Not probably, but they definitely did. And while the abundance of things seems to be talked about throughout the law, that the people had a lot of different material possessions on account of coming from Egypt, at the time, that people had to work pretty hard to keep their herds and keep their crops and things of that nature. So working was a natural part of life that had to happen under most circumstances. But this is not saying that those people who were rich or had many servants were not or they were allowed to somehow take the entire week off. While we have to think about the law on labor and work as not just particularly dealing with hard work and sweating and things like that, but that is a thing of production or productivity, to be a productive person. And it's not to say that on the Sabbath you aren't productive in anything. For instance, I'm recording this on the Sabbath, so I don't view this as particularly as a type of work, and as it being ministerial, I would have no problem sharing this with anybody on a Sabbath day. I mean, it's kind of enjoyable to some extent to do Bible study. So, in that being said, you know, there is a certain productivity that is allowed to happen at all times, but there is something that is being offered no matter what you do, whether you sit at an office job and do your work where you don't seem to really labor, you just sit down all day, or whether you read books for a living on account of doing paperwork or something like that, or whatever it is that you might do. That part of your labor or part of your sustenance, the thing that helps keep money coming in or keep you satisfied with food for someone who does labor in order to produce it for you, there has to be a stopping point so that you can once again go back to the reason for the Sabbath. Remember the Sabbath day and to keep it holy, so that you can worship the Creator who created everything in 6 days and rested on that time frame. There is a specific purpose for taking that time away from your common labors and your common activities that you do to produce for yourself, so that you can worship God and study His Word, and that you can get closer to Him. And it also allows for the person who is a physical worker, who works away from home, or who works further from his family, to have time with his family and to be able to reconnect with the things in his life that are more important a lot of times than the 6 days of labor bring to him, and the people that are in his path and the things he has to do during that time. So we have to, I think, look at the command as to do something productive for 6 days, absolutely. And that on the Sabbath day that we have to put that aside, so that for 6 days we are consecutively doing something diligently, but that on the Sabbath day we have a purpose for resting. I think that any hard-working person, a person who works hard, and not to say there aren't people out there who enjoy to work hard for 7 days a week, they very well may. I don't think they're going to live very long, but there's probably people out there who don't mind hard burden every day of their life. But I think most people would enjoy that Sabbath day, and particularly, I don't think, unless a person is being productive for 6 days, And I think the Bible puts this notion forward that people who work or labor for 6 days, that the Sabbath and the new moon, which is the festival period of the Sabbath at the end of the month and at the beginning of the new month, is more enjoyable for the person who takes up a lot of his time providing for his family and for himself the sustenance that are needed. So only a hard-working people would appreciate this law in its entirety anyhow. And I think only a hard-working people also would appreciate the time given back to them by Yahweh for festivities with the family and festivities in Yahweh's word with the church or whoever they might be congregating with. When they are hardworking people, those things are appreciated, is, I think, what it goes out to tell us. So that particularly, Yahweh would desire out of us not just a hardworking people, but also a people who are desirous for his Sabbath and for his commandments. That the Sabbath is a symbolism of the covenant that Yahweh has with Israel, as Exodus chapter 31 says, and that it is a sign between us and him literally in the heavens, and that it is also a thing that he wants us to remember so that we can be his people and he can be our God. So he desires a people who desire the Sabbath also so that they can worship him and do the things that are pleasing to him beyond just manual labor or sustenance type working to provide for themselves. And this is primarily, I think, the focal point here on this message, and that it's covering Exodus chapter 20 as version of the Ten Commandments particularly. And I hope that it goes out of its way to help explain some of the pitfalls of dogma, goes out of its way to explain holiness and purification of the Sabbath, that it is to be kept for worshiping God, it's to be kept for rest, and that it is to be remembered in multiple different ways, and that it definitely ties in to the messages that have been talked about in the lights in the heavens also. So that while this message is not specifically about the timing of the Sabbath, as the other message had been, it is about how to keep it and the ways that the commandment itself particularly offers us in thinking as we define it throughout other places in the Bible. And it also goes out of its way to not just tell us about the day of rest or the days of rest, but it goes out of its way to tell us that Yahweh desires his people to be a hard-working people and a people that labor or produce something for 6 days, which would inevitably make a better culture, a better society, and a better group of people if they were to give their time to the things that the law not just commands but asks of them to do. If you think about it, not every person is made to be a preacher or a teacher or to be a Bible student even, unfortunately. Some people just don't have the gifts of even reading the Bible down, and some people just can't read. But some people are hard workers, and so while you can worship Yahweh and understand the intricacies of different things in the Scripture that may come to you on the Sabbath, there is also the Christian who cannot do that, or the person who wants to worship Yahweh, who can worship Yahweh through his 6 days of labor and come back and be thankful for it on the seventh in the most simplest form. In such a simple form that even animals, servants, beasts, and all of the like that are mentioned in both Exodus chapter 20 and Deuteronomy chapter 5 are talked about. So, in that way, I think that this should give an understanding of not just the end of the week and not just the ends and beginnings of the months, which essentially leads to the endings and beginnings of the years, but that it would give an overview of the 6 working days also, and in the ways that maybe we can help better our society and our Christian congregations as we are trying to learn about the Sabbath, to use it not just as a way to separate ourselves from the world, but to gather Christians together, hopefully, in wanting to use the Sabbath as a learning tool and giving each other the liberty to learn from it. So that will conclude this message.